Hello and welcome back to the final module in Windows Store Apps using HTML and JavaScript Refresh. Yeah. This is module 6 and we're going to be talking about tools and tooling and asynchronous improvements in the framework. So pretty exciting stuff. I'm glad that this one's last.
I'm glad.
Best for last.
I'm glad it's last because you want to remember the things that are going to make you so productive, and this is one of those things that you're going to want to watch.
Yeah, I'm really passionate about developer productivity. I always say optimize for developer joy until you figure out that there's a performance issue where you need to do something a little bit different, but otherwise I'm big on optimizing for developer joy. That's actually why I really like C#, and then since I've been using JavaScript, there's plenty of developer joy in JavaScript. I'm really loving it. Okay, so we're going to talk about tools, and we're going to talk about asynchronous programming. I'm going to walk you through the agenda a little bit. It is our final module. We're going to talk about some general updates. When we say tools, we're basically talking about Visual Studio 2013 Preview, okay? That's the new version of Visual Studio that's made for making Windows. It's made for making all kinds of apps, but it allows you to make Windows Store apps for Windows 8.1, okay? You do have to have Windows Visual Studio 2013 preview on Windows 8.1 in order to create a Windows 8.1 app, okay? That is a requirement. So I'll talk you through some general updates, and then we'll look at what's new in diagnostics, debugging and performance analysis, things like that in Visual Studio. Exciting stuff there. The JavaScript and HTML editors in Visual Studio, and the HTML in Blend. When we say the HTML design tool, that is Blend. That's our design tool. And then Web Essentials is an add-on that was not actually in the curriculum, but I love it. And I decided to pack it in here and talk to you about Web Essentials. Web Essentials is kind of like our playground for Visual Studio. You can add some things into Web Essentials, and then when developers report that they love them, boom, just move them right into the product. So WAC 3.0, what is that? That's the Windows Application Certification Kit. So this is the really important to you. You run the WAC on your app before you submit it to the store. That way, if it fails the WAC, it was going to fail the store anyway, so you find out early. It's a good deal for you as the developer. And finally, the WinJS scheduler. It's new in the WinJS library, the JavaScript library that's made to help you create apps for Windows 8 using HTML and JavaScript. And the scheduler is pretty awesome, so we'll see that. So general updates. First of all, the first thing that Visual Studio is capable of doing that kind of obviously has to be in there is the ability to upgrade or migrate a Windows 8 app or project for an app to Windows 8.1. And Michael showed this to you just a few minutes ago, so you probably remember. He opened an app in Visual Studio, a project, that was targeting Windows 8, and it said, hey, I noticed that this is targeting Windows 8. Do you want to migrate this to target Windows 8.1? Now, there are some really good resources that come out of the build content. So the build 2013 content had a lot of really good sessions. And at one of those sessions, it talked about all of the things to consider as you're migrating your app from 8 to 8.1. There's quite a bit to consider because there are actually, for instance, in the list view that we looked at earlier, the way that the list view works is completely different. And so when you upgrade your app, you then need to go look at it and make sure that it looks the same, make sure that it looks good. In fact, what I would do, I suggest that you take a screen capture before you migrate your app, take a screen capture of each of the views of your app and just save those images. And then after you migrate your app, go and take a screen capture of each of the images as they've been migrated and do a difference of those. Somebody noticed that I'm a big fan of Beyond Compare. You could use Beyond Compare to do image differencing, and then you can even see subtle differences in the images one from another and see if things are to your expectations. You also have some updates to the templates for things like the navigation app, the grid app, the blank app, the split app. Those different app templates, project templates in Visual Studio for a Windows Store app using JavaScript. And there's one brand new one, that's the hub template. We'll definitely look at that. Azure Mobile Services and push notification by way of Azure Mobile Services is built right into the tooling. This is kind of fun. You're able in Visual Studio to just go right click. We'll look at that. And then after you build your app, you can run the WAC. We'll look at that. And finally, the ever important Visual Studio Blue theme. Have you seen the blue theme?
Actually, I I think I've seen it just once, and I'm dying to see it again because I think I thought it was cool, and then I, you know, my mind went off and into other places.
Your mind went off. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It truly
never happens to me.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Yeah, I would really like to see it.
Okay, let's go ahead and open, just so we have a project open. I'm going to start with the Code Show project here. And, okay, so this is interesting. I haven't seen this before.
No, don't see it.
Oh, thank you. So you're not seeing what I'm looking at anyway, but Visual Studio is throwing up a message. I shouldn't say it's throwing up. That's got a bad connotation.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's giving me a message saying that it found a suitable location, da-da-da-da. You could read the whole thing, like I did one day, or you could just remember what's actually happening here, that I have the same thing open in multiple locations. And so as opposed to trying to open that again, I'm just going to go open the other instance that I have open. That way, we won't conflict. Okay, so here I have, I'm going to start with the end. I'm going to show you the blue theme. Here I am in Visual Studio.
Okay.
This is the light theme for Visual Studio. This is the default.
Okay.
And remember at Visual Studio 2012, it was really reworked.
It was.
It was very much redesigned. And
yes.
It's light, but there's meaning in all the colors. I went to a design session on Visual Studio, and I was really impressed. There's meaning behind the colors in the symbols and the icons of Visual Studio. And for symbols that don't have meaning or if they don't have context, you might not see any color in them at all. So it's designed to kind of let some things kind of fade away. Because Visual Studio is an incredibly powerful tool, and there's about 7 billion functions that are brought to the screen at any given point, and you don't want to be distracted by a bunch of noise. And so I really like this design. In fact, notice the menus. Do you notice that the menus are all capitals?
I didn't notice that before.
There's a reason for that, even. When you put something in all caps, it actually indicates to your eye, to your brain, that this is not so much information that you need to read right now as it is just something like a menu or part of a button, or it's just a symbol almost, okay? So anyway, that's pretty cool. But anytime you want Visual Studio, you go to Tools, Options, and then on the General tab, you've got the color theme. There's light, there's dark. Let's take a look at dark. Some people love the dark theme. And they don't see any reason in the world why anybody could use a light theme. I think they're a little bit crazy. I think the light theme is just fine. Dark theme's not bad, but there's some people that they really hold their ground on here. So I'd like to hear from you guys in the chat room what you think about the light-dark debate. But we also now have Tools, Options, Blue. You go to Blue, you hit OK, and what does that look like to you?
Blue.
It looks like Visual Studio 2010.
Kind of does.
That's exactly what Visual Studio 2010 looked like. So hey, if you want a little jump to a few years ago, more power to you. But as for me and my house, I'm going to keep my Visual Studio on color theme light. Now, have you ever known that there was something in the options somewhere in Visual Studio, but you couldn't remember where?
Oh, it happens all the time.
Line numbers. Remember, have you ever wanted to turn line numbers on?
Yeah, and you have to find that dumb text editor thing, all languages, blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. It's in like 7 levels, which,
yes.
You know, it's organized well. There's just
it
so much stuff.
It is organized well. There you go.
Yeah. Well, there's Quick Launch, and I'm showing you this. It's been there for a long time, but some people don't know about Quick Launch.
What?
The shortcut is Control-Q.
Control-Q.
And you can type in there line numbers, and it brings up text editor, all languages, general, bam, there you can open that up, and you're right there on your line numbers. You can turn them on, turn them off, whatever you're looking to do.
I think you need to repeat that one more time.
Whatever you're looking to do. Oh, the whole thing. The whole thing.
What was the keyboard shortcut?
The keyboard shortcut is Control-Q, and it actually gives you the indication of that right here, Control-Q. Or you can just click in the box, and you can type line numbers. Enter, brings it right up. I can turn on or off. I can't see how people can live without line numbers. See, we developers, we get particular about these things.
Yeah, that's all slick, right. Man.
Okay, so that's Quick Launch. By the way, control semicolon allows you to filter your Solution Explorer. So all HTML files are now showing. I'm going to turn off the external dependencies. And now I'm looking at only HTML files. isn't that slick? And I can turn it off and watch this. If I'm working on a particular demo in Code Show and I'm like 7 levels deep into my project now, on any given folder or project or whatever in my Solution Explorer, see this home, see this right click? I can right click and I can scope to this, and now that's the only thing that appears in my Project Explorer, in my Solution Explorer rather. And then if I want to go back home, I can hit home or I can hit back, but I can focus. Focus is good. I can focus on one area of my application.
That's cool.
I'm showing you some things that have been there. They're not new in Windows 8.1, but I just run into a number of shortcuts that people haven't seen before, and it's really helpful to show them. Okay, so I told you about the updates already. I told you about the blue theme. We saw migration from 8 to 8.1. Let's look at the updated templates. Actually, the templates that are existing are not new enough that it really even makes sense to open them and show you the differences. But if I close down the Code Show project and then I go to File, New, Project, I can show you the hub template. Very cool. JavaScript. Windows Store, these ones are existing. Hub is new. Okay, so I choose Hub. I'll just call that App1, and I'm going to put it in my temp folder. So it's going to be called App2. The Hub is actually a really good place to start. It comes with quite a bit of stuff that's going on with the data.js file and the way it loads its sample data and stuff, but it's pretty easy to just replace what's happening in the data.js file. So it's a good place to start. I used to tell everybody, hey, I usually start with the navigation app and build up from there. Now I actually start with the Hub app just because it gives me some really good design and stuff. Okay, so when you open the Hub app, you can immediately hit play, and of course it's going to work, and it's going to open the Hub. Here's app 2. We've got a nice header. The gray is actually an image, so it's showing me a hero image on the left. I'd probably want to replace that with something a bit more exciting. And then I've got a number of sections. We looked at the Hub before. This is just the Hub, basically as an app. And it's all working. Look at section 2 has a chevron on it. I can click that. It'll take me to section 2. I can also click on an individual item. It'll navigate me to an item. And finally, in my opinion, the names make sense. Let's go look at the pages, hub, section, and item. Isn't that better than grouped items, grouped
yes.
item detail, grouped mm-hmm. item detail? Much better.
Makes much more sense.
Yeah, love it. So that's the hub template. Let's now look at the tooling that supports Azure Mobile Services and push notifications. So here I just created app 2. It's a blank app.
Okay.
Well, it's a hub app. It works great, no problems. Let's go ahead and add Azure Mobile Services to this app. Now there's two things I can add: push notifications specifically, or a connection to Azure Mobile Services in general. If I right click on my project, you see this add connected service?
I do.
There's a lot of hope in this dialog box, in my opinion. A lot of things that could be added through this. A lot of services that you could add to your app through it. Look at this. Here's mobile services from Windows Azure, and it's enumerates looking at my Azure subscription. I've previously given it I've logged into my dashboard.
Okay.
And now it's giving me all of these apps. And I could actually create, here I'm creating a new mobile service on the fly. Here's the subscription that I want to use, and this is called App 2, so let's call this App 2. Here's the mobile service in the cloud that's going to sit behind App 2 for me.
But why isn't it more complicated?
I don't know why they decided not to make it complicated. And then I'm going to use my super secret password. What database do I want this to go in? I'm going to put it in the CF whatever database. It's my favorite one. And it wants my password again. Because I changed the database. Let's create that. This is creating a mobile service. It's something I could have done on the dashboard, but I'm doing it right here in Visual Studio.
I didn't know you could do this.
It's pretty great, isn't it?
I always do it the hard way. Oh my
it's pretty
gosh,
great.
This is awesome. If everyone's watching, if you've never done Azure stuff, let me tell you what, do it the way he's just doing it. That's the easy way. That is so easy. That was simple.
Except I may have typed my password wrong. I kind of felt like I did. Like, maybe I should hit backspace and be sure. No, maybe I typed it right.
I think the failure, however, will probably be a lot quicker than if we went the long way and did it that way and it failed.
Yeah, it still
I bet you he gets to failure quicker.
That's the goal. Oh, see, I think I may have typed it wrong. Okay, let's wait for it again, because this is a... It'd be unfortunate if... Oh, look at that. Why is it failing to connect? Ugh. I don't know. I don't know why it's not connecting. Okay, well, the point is that when I connect to that, I then get in my app, in my server explorer, the ability... Look at this. The ability to browse, and if that one was failing, this one probably will too. It might be... Ah, that works. Okay. Oh, and it's even created app 2 for me. That's kind of crazy. Okay, so I've created that mobile service.
Okay.
I totally planned it that way, by the way. I've created that mobile service, and now look at this. I can create a table.
Are you serious?
So mobile services allow you to create data that's easy to access through a NoSQL fashion, authentication through Facebook, Google, Twitter, Microsoft account, all of those with one line of code. They give you push notifications, and all of this is cross-platform. So not just push notifications to Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8 or both, but also to iOS and Android. Okay, so really amazing. Azure Mobile Services is really amazing. And now I'm creating a new table in Azure Mobile Services, and I'm just going to call this table whatever. That's all. I could specify the access levels, but usually it's fine to leave those as they are at first until you go into production. So I'll go ahead and hit create. And now app 2, look at that, it's going to say failed, and then it's going to work just fine. Loading. No, it didn't. So these mobile services actually have tables, and when they load correctly, these tables appear in here, and you can go look at the data that's in those tables, okay? So here's, for instance, another database that I have, and I'm sorry, not the data, but the scripts that you have
sure.
for those tables. So for this table, there are four JavaScript scripts that you normally were writing in the browser in Azure Mobile Services, if you're used to that. Mm-hmm. But now you can actually open those scripts, edit them in Visual Studio, and then when you're done, you save that, it goes back up into your Azure dashboard.
Wow.
So super cool to be able to work in Visual Studio on the scripts that go up to Azure. So that's great. Now, I've added a connection to Azure Mobile Services. I've created a table. What it's done for me is it's done some modifications to my project for me, and it's given me some JavaScript in here that basically gives me a connection to this service so that I can refer to it very easily. Now, I can also add push notifications, and I'm going to do that really quick. So I'm going to go to, I thought it was just the project.
What are you looking for?
Add push notifications. It's not right in the, which is nice because that menu is already huge.
Okay, I'm bracing myself.
Here goes, add push notifications.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you, now this is important. This is the type of thing that I tune into actually. It's going to do a bunch of things to my app.
Uh-oh.
I wanted to know what.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saved my folder with Beyond Compare, and then I ran this, and then I compared it to see, so I could see with my own eyes everything that it did to my app.
Exactly.
And you might want to do the same just so you have a good handle on exactly what it's doing. But it's smart what it's doing. It's adding some JavaScript, a client to Azure Mobile Services, and it's adding some sample code for me, and I'll show that to you right now.
Cool.
So I'm going to go ahead and run through this. It does need a connection to my dashboard, to the store, so I'm going to sign in. Hopefully I typed that one right. Now, which app is this? It doesn't really matter for demo purposes, so I'm just going to choose fake app 87. Select the service. I'm going to choose app 2. I do recommend you read all those screens, but if we did that on the video, it would be a little bit painful. Okay, so I want to show you what this has created for me. In my app 2, it's created for me a connection to, so the SDK has been installed, which is just JavaScript, it's just a reference to a library. And now it's given me my specific application key.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'll kill that shortly after this, so don't think you can hijack my application.
I was just in the process.
Actually, if you want to hijack that application, more power to you. So this is going to go to my specific app, my specific application key, mm-hmm. and now anywhere, and notice that this is in the global namespace. This isn't wrapped in an immediate function. So app2client is available anywhere in my application. Let me go to JavaScript, default. Look at this. App2, come on in for me. Just app2client dot, look at that. Get table. I got IntelliSense on JavaScript in Visual Studio. I'm always happy about that. So that's the client connection, and then I actually have the registration of a push notification. And actually, that's not the one I'm interested in. It is. Oh, now I forgot where to actually put it, but this app now, if we run it, mm-hmm. and my notifications may be turned off like yours.
Oh, no.
It, as a sample, will do a push notification right here. That's not just a notification that's generated from within this app, from within my running code. It's actually doing the push notification from the push notification server through Microsoft's push notification server to my app, okay?
Wow.
So it's doing the full round trip. That means that your app doesn't even have to be running, and the user can receive notifications for their app. All right. Boy, oh boy, that's mobile services and push notifications built right into the app. Now, the app bundle support, you already showed. Just going to pass right over the app bundle support because Michael already showed that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to look at app validation with the WAC. Let's just say, you know what, this app is the greatest ever. App 2 looks a lot like the hub, but it's my app and it looks
exactly.
good. So it's time to submit this to the store. Project,
okay.
store,
mm-hmm.
create an app package.
Okay.
Is this for the store? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sign in. And it did this yesterday too. I don't know why this is rendering this blank. Might be a bug. If I close down Visual Studio and reopen it, it fixes it. So I just play by the rules. Here we're coming back up. I should have App 2 in my recent project store. Whoops. Project store. Create an app package. For the store, yes, please. There it is. Lie.com. Here we go. It brings up an app list. You're associating your local app with one of your apps in the store. Mm-hmm. I'm choosing a nonsense one, but you would already have yours created there. I'm done. Create. And the next screen is, wait for it. Here we go. On this screen, my package has been created and it wants to know if I want to launch the WAC tool. If you have Visual Studio 2013 preview installed, you have the WAC 3.0. You have the newest version of the WAC tool. Now, this tool takes quite a bit of time to run because it's actually launching your app, testing some stuff, closing it down, launching it again, closing it down, and you need to not use your computer while it's doing it. I know that the WAC 3.0, one of the things that it upgraded was the ability to do multiple tests at once. So I'm not sure how resilient it is to allowing you to do other things while the tests are underway, because I haven't tested that yet. But I'm going to go ahead and launch it. Normally you'd say, oh great, here we go, 5 to 8 minutes, right? But it has an interface that allows me to select all my tests or just select one of my tests.
Oh.
So I'm just going to select one of these for the purpose of time so that we don't wait for all of them. And you saw a little black screen flash. Sometimes you'll see the app actually launch and come back down.
And I think the really positive message here, especially with what you just demonstrated, is if you want to know what it looks like to pass, you could just select maybe just one of those, like you just did, and you'll get that warm and fuzzy what the screen should look like if you did them all.
Yeah, if you want to feel good, just run one test. As with your unit
yeah.
tests on your project,
oh,
if you just run one of those, you're going to feel a lot better.
That'll make me feel good.
All of your tests passed.
Very cool.
Okay, so let's finish that. That's the WAC tool. It's not too exciting. The WAC tool is not too exciting, but it's essential. Okay. We've already talked about the new theme in Visual Studio. It's just that it couldn't be more important, right? Okay, let's look at, what are we gonna look at? Diagnostics. Lots of stuff in the area of diagnostics has been changed. Lots of it very exciting. Some of it, I'm not allowed to tell you. But the stuff I am allowed to tell you, you're about to hear. So, diagnostics, here's what's added as it pertains to webheads. Mixed language debugging. Now you know that you were able to switch, you were able to debug JavaScript, right? Or you were able to do mixed mode debugging between C# and C++. You were not, however, able to do mixed mode debugging between JavaScript and other languages. You are now, with Visual Studio 2013 Preview, able to do mixed mode debugging between JavaScript and native, between JavaScript and C++, okay? So it's not all there yet, but this is a very important step. This is a very good addition. If you have components that are written natively, that are written in C++, and you're using JavaScript, then you now have a debugging experience that is excellent because it just jumps right in between those two languages live on the fly, okay? That's great. You also have async debugging improvements. Now let me show you what this means. I'm gonna go into our super cool app too, and I'm gonna look for hubs. I'm gonna hit control comma and go to hub.js. First, I'm gonna kill my slides so that you can actually see what I'm doing. And then I'm gonna go hit control comma, hub.js. And it's gonna find that hub.js. That's a really quick way to get to the file you know you want, right?
Control comma.
Control comma. So when the hub page is ready, this code runs, and I'm gonna just write some code in the front here, okay? I'm gonna wait for 5 seconds. How in JavaScript do we wait for 5 seconds? Well, I could do a set timeout, or I could do a promise timeout, which would do it using the new promise pattern, which is nice, very nice. So I can create myself a new win.js promise timeout. And I want to set that timeout for, say, 2 seconds. And what can I do after a promise, any promise? When I make a promise, I can?
Be then or done.
Then or done. So let's do a then. And here's the function we want to run, then. So in here, I'm going to just write debugger. Okay? And after here, I'm going to just write debugger. Debugger is the equivalent of setting a breakpoint.
Interesting.
Except you don't have to write some code so that you can make a breakpoint there. You can just write the word debugger. Same thing in C# as system, diagnostics, debugger, debug management, debugger. Debugging breakpoint. I forgot what it was in C#. I apologize. Debugger. It's easy to remember in JavaScript anyway, okay? So I've done something asynchronously here. And now I'm going to debug this application by pressing F5. Here we go. I land at that first debugger, and here's where you see what the change is in the asynchronicity. You look at the call stack. Now, we haven't landed inside the asynchronous function yet.
No.
But if I hit F5, I will land inside the asynchronous function, and notice this line right here.
Okay.
Before this change, you only got this context. Because we jumped into a new context when we jumped into an asynchronous function, and the call stack wasn't able to show us everything preceding. Now we get a nice little indicator that says there was an asynchronous call between here. Here's the stuff from before it, and here's the stuff after it.
Groovy.
Very groovy. Very groovy. So that's the asynchronous update. We also have some improvements to the DOM Explorer. Let's look at that. F5 again. Actually, I shouldn't have hit that. I don't want to stop every time at those breakpoints. I also don't want to wait 2 seconds when I don't have to, so let's just kill all of that. Here's our app. Now, the DOM Explorer, if you haven't seen it before, you're going to like this. If you have seen it before, there are improvements. They're just not, you know, incredibly dramatic, but they're pretty cool. So I'm going to go into Visual Studio. Because I'm in debug mode, I'm able to go to the debug menu and then go to Windows, and then to the DOM Explorer. So if you don't already have it showing, that's how you get to it. And the DOM Explorer shows you the live version of your DOM. If I had JavaScript running that was changing my DOM, I would see it changing right now live. It is a live view of the HTML that represents your DOM, of the DOM of your application. If you don't know what DOM is, that's the document object model, okay? It's a tree structure of all the objects that make up your user interface. Now, I have this toggle checked, which means that it's going to show all the highlight borders. You'll see that in a second. And I can choose Select Element. This is much like the developer tools in any of the major browsers. I can choose this and then switch back over to my app and then notice I get this little highlight. And while it's highlighting, it's actually also showing me some extra information. So right now I see blue. Blue represents the content. If I hover right here, notice I see blue and then I see some kind of orange or red.
I do.
That means that there's some padding around that section. Whoa. So blue is content, red is padding. And if you ever wonder what that key is, you just go over here and you look at the layout and it shows you blue is content, red is padding, green is border, yellow is margin. That's right. So you can glance at this and go, oh, I see, there's space in between these sections because each of those sections has some padding.
Wow.
Very, very helpful. And I can click on this and it'll take me to that element in the DOM Explorer. So let's click on something a little bit more embedded. How about this?
Yeah.
It'll take me right to that item title.
Wow.
And I can see that that item title has a class of WinType Medium, but what about this? Why does it have the style that it does?
Yeah, why does it?
Jump into the traces, and I can look and see that it received its font family information from here. It's going to give me the information about where it retrieved, where it inherited, rather, these style properties. I can also go look at all of the rules that are applying to it with live links to the files where those rules are defined. And I can look at the computed references. In other words, what all values did this object receive, regardless of where they came from? And I can turn off this filter that says click to display all styles. I can click on that. And now I can see all of the CSS properties and what it's calculated to be. Most of these are what they are because of their default value. But some of these, if I go back to the top and turn that back off, some of these actually have been set. And this will tell you how or where that got set. This one got set, and then it got overridden. And that those both happened in the UIDark CSS file.
Wow.
Okay, so super powerful there. It's also showing me, this is my favorite, this is showing me a preview of the color. Here's what transparent looks like. Did you know that that's what transparent looks like? I'm glad to have that preview of the transparent color. Yeah, I think that's very important. Okay, so that's the DOM Explorer. There are actually a number more improvements, one of which is this breadcrumb control that shows you where you're at and allows you to link around to where you want to go.
You had me at margin.
I know. Beyond the DOM Explorer, we also have some JavaScript console upgrades. So if I can get there.
What kind of upgrades?
JavaScript console.
Oh, yeah.
The JavaScript console is always waiting for you when you're in debug mode. Again, you go to debug, Windows, JavaScript console. I normally have that open. And in the JavaScript console, you can do whatever you want. So
I like where you have yours positioned in the IDE.
I drop
Much
it in
better.
The big window.
Yes.
Yeah, I drop it in the big window there.
Good idea.
Now let's go write a little bit of code and show that we can interact with this JavaScript console programmatically. Not that this is new, but if you don't know this, you need to because it's very helpful. I'm going to write a for loop. F-O-R, tab, tab.
Excellent.
That's nice, huh?
Mm-hmm.
10 times. I want to console log I. Okay, so I'm going to write to the console the value of my loop. It should be 0 through 9, right?
Yes.
Control Shift F5 restarts the app in debug mode. That's a good shortcut. And now I should be able to run over to Visual Studio, look in my console, and I should see the values 0 through 9 output on the screen right here, because I did that programmatically. Now, I don't have to do everything programmatically. I can write in the console right here. So I could do console.log hi. There we go. Now I've console logged the word hi. And I can also interact with my DOM. So I could, for instance, say something along the lines of document dot, if you don't know about query selector, you must. Query selector allows me to select using CSS selector syntax. There's a sister method called query selector all that tells me how many it's found. Let's try this. Query selector all div And then let's look at the length. I think that's supported, actually. Yeah, there we go. 145 divs in the DOM.
Whoa.
That's fun to say. How many body tags are in the DOM? One. What about a tag, let's just do the query selector now, that has a class of win type large? And let's actually show it. It's null. What was that?
There's let's win look type at the, ellipse or button.
Let's find it in the DOM here. Let's go to that individual element, and it was win type medium. Apparently, they're not using win type large anywhere. So let's look for an element with a class of win type large. And there's going to be more, I'm sorry, medium. There's going to be more than one, but query selector will only bring back the first one. But what it brings back is the DOM element. So if I hit enter, I'm going to see
Whoa.
The actual DOM element.
It's there.
Now, what if I don't want just a rendering of that DOM element? I actually want the element itself. Check this out. I wrap that with dir, and now I get the actual element. So now I can browse all of the JavaScript properties of that DOM element dynamically, interactively, and see exactly what it's composed of. Super duper helpful. By the way, all of that, mm-hmm. so let's copy that, can also be done if I hit Shift F9 through the, pop up for me, maybe it doesn't work when I'm on that screen, Shift F9. It's not bringing up QuickWatch. Why isn't QuickWatch? Oh, because I'm broken. No, because I'm not broken. So let's break here. Restart with Control-Shift F5. I'm broken. Now I can hit Shift F9, and I can paste something like that query selector in there. And if that exists, then it's going to bring it into this interface, and now I can browse it this way. This is a really great way to look at the values of all these properties. And when you're working with JavaScript, this is a wonderful world because everything's dynamic. You just get to go look dynamically at properties. I could go dynamically add properties. Let's just try that. This is fun. Let's just say the win type medium, the first one, I want to add a property called duck equals quack. It says, okay. Essentially, we just did that. And so now if I go back to that property and I browse it, I should see duck with a value of quack. This is JavaScript. It didn't have that property before, but we're duck typing, which means that we're just randomly and in an ad hoc fashion adding properties to an object. So super awesome environment to work in Visual Studio here. And these diagnostics upgrades are very much appreciated. Now the JavaScript, the memory profiler does some extra stuff, but I didn't have time to dig into it. But I am going to show you real quick that I can go to the debug menu and I can start this with performance analysis. And I'm counting on the fact that at least some of you haven't seen the performance analysis, the memory profiler on JavaScript even once. And so hopefully this will be helpful to you and it's very quick. I just run the app with performance analysis. It immediately starts capturing the performance metrics, runs the app, and now if I wanted to, I could run through a scenario, like I could scroll my app, I could navigate somewhere, I could start a video, start playing a game, I could do something that I know is very intense, has very intense processor demands, and then I can flip back over to Visual Studio where it says, hey, I'm currently profiling, and I can stop it and say, okay, just go ahead and package up everything you just did, figure out, give me a report that shows me what happened, and it has to analyze that report. It takes just a little bit of time. And here we go. It gives us an excellent report that tells us where most of the time was spent in this code. So these are little flames. I can drill in and find the expensive functions. So the function where I was spending so much time doing a timeout or blocking the user thread or something like that, I can see those instantly and I can jump right to it in my code and fix it. So the performance analysis is great. And there are some really cool differences in Windows 8.1 in Visual Studio 2013, and you can dig into those and look at the specifics if you'd like.
I'm curious, showing any of the some of the JavaScript delta differences in the text editor?
The JavaScript editor? That's next, actually.
Is that next? Oh,
that's next. Yep.
So happy.
Yep, so we're going to look at the JavaScript editor. Some of the changes in the JavaScript editor, they might appear to be minor, but in my opinion, they're major.
They're huge.
Let's look at hub.js. What's your favorite one, Michael?
Favorite one what?
Your favorite addition, your favorite update.
Well, if I have Visual Studio 2012 open, and let's say I'm just starting to code and I like to do, you know, a lot of the code because it's just right here. I don't want to, you know, I just want to get going. Even just closing, just the closing blocks.
All right.
Can you show that one?
Yeah, let's take a look at that. Let's do a for loop. This time we won't do it the fast way. We'll say for, open parenthesis.
Mm-hmm.
I just stumped myself. Why didn't that work? Why didn't it close it? I'm in my JavaScript file.
Yeah.
Let's close this down, save changes, and reopen it. I don't know why that didn't work. Let's try. App 2, jump into, if it's not already open, hub.js. Did I appear stunned? I was stunned right there. 4. It is just not working. I don't know why. And it's not working on that either.
Let me see. Let me just check something here.
I might have something conflicting.
So, could you put the screen over on me? For you there? Yeah.
That should work.
So, just so that you don't think that this is a bunch of hoke, right now I'm going to do the same thing he did. F-O-R, and then I'm just going to open up parentheses. And just notice it closes it right away. And the same thing would be if I were to open up a curly brace. It's just the automatic completion. So that's one of the things. And the other thing I would just showcase too, and I noticed your IntelliSense thing wasn't pulling up either.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a clue for you if you wanted to check into
that. It looks like it's working.
But for X equals, you know, just like a blank string. And then I could say if, and then notice if I put X equals whatever. You'll notice that I don't need the semicolon.
Double equal.
Triple
equal.
True. The X is highlighted everywhere. Everywhere I'm going to use X now, if I just, you know, have the cursor on it, it's highlighted. If you go into 2012, it's significant. Once you go back, it's like, oh, man, I missed those things.
Yeah. That's super helpful, too. It automatically highlights all other instances of that variable. It's really intelligent about it, too. It doesn't highlight that word anywhere. Notice on my screen again, notice that I have this element highlighted, and it's highlighting element up here, but it's not highlighting element down here. Because even though they're spelled exactly the same way, this is a different element. This is the element under hub, not the element that this one is referring to. So it's very intelligent about that.
Very cool.
We've also got the editor navigation bar, and it's slipping my mind what that is. The editor navigation bar.
Editor navigation bar.
Well, this
sounds delicious.
It's full of nougat. Which, that's funny, nougat.
Okay.
So let's actually look at most of the content that I'm getting this from is under, again, the What's New 8.1, and let's go look at the editor navigation bar. Well, obviously, this new UI feature helps you identify and move through the important elements in your source code. Oh, that's right. The editor navigation bar, right up here at top, it identifies the different methods and members of the current code and allows me to jump exactly to them. So this was available. This has been available forever in Visual Basic.
Exactly.
And now we've got it in JavaScript, so that's excellent.
I see.
How are we doing on time? Okay, we've got more to show. Identifier highlighting, you already showed that off, so that's awesome. Let's look at Blend really quick. I won't be able to give you a real in-depth idea of Blend, but Blend does have some really awesome features, including animation timeline. So that's one of the things that you can do. If you want to open Blend from Visual Studio, it's super easy. You just right-click on the project and say, open this in Blend. It's going to ask me to save that. It's going to open it in Blend, and here's the thing you have to know. In Blend, your application is running, okay? It's actually running. The JavaScript is compiled. You can see that we're looking at this hub, and we're looking at it live. And if I try to click on things or move around, it thinks I'm a designer. It's asking, you know, it's giving me my design handles and allowing me to resize things. But if I click up here on interactive mode, then it says, oh, I'm gonna treat you like a user. So I click on interactive mode, and now it supports touch, I can touch, I can drill into section 2, and then I can jump back out of interactive mode, and it keeps my state, so I can click on this item in section 2. This is on the section page now, and it shows me the selected content is part of section.html. It's brilliant that it even knows that, because I'm actually on default.html. This uses single page architecture, so I'm on default.html, and the content from section.html was dynamically loaded in here, and it knows that.
That's cool.
So I can click, and you click multiple times to drill in. That's kind of a cool usability feature, I think, to that one item, and now I can update this item. Now, because this is a list view, I'm actually not just gonna change this one item. I'm gonna change all of them because I'm editing the item template. And live, I get to watch it modify
nice.
All of those other items because I modified that item template. Now, for the value of the various properties in this item template, let me see if I can do this for you live. I did it once, but now I'm forgetting. But I believe that, well, first of all, I can look for properties in here. But I can look at this, edit data binding. So which property did I click on? Let's not look at the max height. Let's look at, I'm not sure which of these would be best to look at. Maybe well, let's just grab any of them. But I want to show you that we, in the HTML JavaScript world now, we have the ability to do data binding in Blend. So I can click here, edit the data binding, and I can choose that I want this property to be bound to a certain object. And look at this. It actually gives me a view of the item that this is data bound to. So I go, oh yeah, that's right. I have a description. I can data bind to that. And now, although it's nonsensical, this data property, the margin bottom, is bound to that. I may very well, in my object, have either a real property or a converter or something that I want to data bind to any of the various CSS properties, and I can do that through that interface. Okay, that's all the time I'll spend on Blend, but it's super duper awesome. I love Blend. In iterations previous to Visual Studio 2012, I didn't spend too much time in Blend. I just was a Visual Studio guy. But now I jump back and forth, and I use Blend on a number of occasions. So lots of things that were added to it. CSS animation, JavaScript behaviors, custom font embedding through the interface, the dynamic binding that I showed you, rules guides, border radius, lots of cool stuff in there. So then we're going to move into the Web Essentials demo. And for Web Essentials, this again is an add-on to Visual Studio. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to Tools, Extensions and Updates. Remember, if you're adding something on to Visual Studio, it's like a new piece of code that works in your tooling, that's Extensions and Updates. Mm-hmm. If you're adding a new library or something to work in your code, then you use NuGet, the package manager. Okay. Right. So I'm going to go to Extensions and Updates, and we should see that I have Web Essentials 2013 preview in here.
Cool.
Okay? Very cool. It's at version 0.2.2, mm-hmm. which means that it's in preview, but boy, it's good. Okay, so the one quick thing that I want to show you, there are a lot of really cool things in Web Essentials. The first quick thing I want to show you, I'm going to show you on an HTML page. I'm on an HTML page.
Okay.
And let's say I want to go ahead and I want to write myself a div with a certain ID.
Mm-hmm.
And inside that div, I want a table with a certain class.
Mm-hmm.
With a row and 5 cells. And in the cells, I want some content. We're all used to this type of thing. I'm going to prototype this.
I don't know if we have time for this.
We don't have time for that. But we have Zen typing. Zen coding. We have Zen coding in Visual Studio 2013 preview in Web Essentials.
Let me see with my own eyes.
So here we go. You basically use CSS selector syntax,
what?
And the Zen coding engine turns that into HTML.
Okay.
It's like working backwards. So
let me see.
Div, my div. That means I want a div element with mm-hmm. an ID of my div,
mm-hmm.
and then a table with a class of standard,
what?
And then a TR with a TD. No, make that 5 TDs.
What?
Tab.
What?
And it wrote all that HTML
That's
for
insane.
Me. That's super awesome. If you haven't used block highlighting before, you could use block highlighting at this point to say, okay, I want to highlight these 5 blanks, mm-hmm. and then I want to type in there a new input of type equals text or something like this. You could sometimes type this way when it lined up. But the other thing that you could do is you could embed that right into your TD. So you want 5 TDs, and you want those to have an input of type equals text. Hope I did that right. Looks like I did.
Whoa.
And now I could, now I've got those inputs with the right type, ready for my values and everything. So that's Zen coding. Zen coding also gives you the ability to say, you know what, I've got 5 cells and I want those to contain some text. So let's just make some text, some lorem ipsum text. Tab.
What?
There we go. Lorem ipsum text. And you can even specify that you want 30 words of lorem ipsum text. And so now it's going to give you 30 words of random text so that you can prototype. You've got some paragraphs in there. So that's really, really nice. And you can also put numbers in there. So let's say that this is cell $. Tab. Let's say that this is, I need to use the curly braces
okay.
for the content,
okay.
and the 5 goes after the curly braces. So I want to put in there, this is cell $ and the curly braces times 5. Tap. There we go. Cell 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It iterated for me. It enumerated for me. And I can say I want leading zeros by getting multiple $.
You
just absolutely beautiful right there. That's just absolutely beautiful.
You
say no more.
You had me at hashtag. It was amazing.
It's just beautiful. Okay. Web Essentials is highly aware of less. Less is super exciting. So here I am in my hub page, my hub.css. I'm over here, hub.css. In my hub.css, I have all kinds of properties, right, including this header banner. And I could say color red and run my app. What does that look like? Looks like red text in the header, right? Can everybody see that red text?
Yes.
In the header, thank you. But let's say that I'm gonna be using that color because it's one of my brand colors, and I'm gonna be using it in a lot of places in this file.
Yeah.
So I go type red, 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 red. Well, what about when I change to green? Now I have to go change that everywhere.
Right.
One of the things that Less provides for us is the ability to create named colors, named values. Well, first I have to change my CSS file into a less file. It says this might become unstable. That's all right. I'm a developer. I know what I'm doing. Notice what happened. Web Essentials has said, let's show him a preview of the CSS that will be generated from this less. Less really just gets converted to CSS. Well, it looks identical. It's because I just made it from a CSS file. But now I'm going to go to the top here and I'm going to say, I want to do my brand color is, and I'm going to do some color. Okay, 192834. That looks, I think that's a good color, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Good color. And now in my color, instead of saying red, I can mm-hmm. say my brand color.
I don't know if it's going to accept that.
And now I can, when that is translated into CSS, you notice that I'm getting that color right there, but if I use it elsewhere, like that, mm-hmm. I'm going to get the same thing. I'm going to get it repeated in my other section. So I'm not having to repeat this. I only declared it one time. Now watch this. What if here I want my color to be my brand color? And here, watch this, Michael. Watch this. This is amazing. Ready? Darken my brand color by 10%.
What?
Let's actually do it here because we know where that one is going to be. So let's darken my brand color. Oh, now I'm getting closing parentheses. Thank you. Let's darken my brand color by 10%. And there it is. You can't hardly see it. Let's darken it by 80%. And I don't even know what that color is. Let's call the color red. And let's darken it by, let's first not darken it at all. Let's just choose red.
Okay.
Oh. Color red in my header. That should work. It's not. And I broke it? I don't know what I did. Anyway, you get the idea. We'll just go ahead and leave that one right there. Okay, Web Essentials, we talked about the WAC, we talked about less support, Zen coding. The JavaScript minification takes 2 seconds to show, so I'm gonna show you. Hub.js, right click, Web Essentials, minify the JavaScript. Holy cow, look at this, I now have a min file of my JavaScript and the whole thing is minified. If I go look in that folder, you can see that the Hub.js is 3K, the min is, well, 3K. Apparently, it that one didn't show off the capability that much, but it also creates a map file for you so you can still debug. Super cool. We also have CSS regions. I won't get into those, but you can add comments that give you regions in CSS. Man, there's just way too much to show. Finally, the last thing, and I'm just going to mention it, that is the WinJS scheduler. The WinJS scheduler is super cool. There is a really good demo in the MSDN samples, so I'm going to go there right now if I can find those. And this is HTML scheduler. And HTML scheduler sample, very helpful. It gives you a lot of, it gives you a really good idea of exactly what the scheduler is going to give for you, it's going to do for you. So I'm going to just run this, and we're going to look at it through the interface. First of all, there are priorities, okay? So you could determine that you want 5 different things to happen. You don't want any of them to block the user thread, so these are all things that you're going to have run as asynchronous operations. Well, probably some of these things are going to be more important than the other things, and you want to give those things priority. And you could create for yourself a framework where you could you could pause things or have them check in so that they could be paused, and then you could pause things whenever they weren't the highest priority and let the other thing run. But you don't want to have to do all that plumbing by yourself, so you use the WinJS scheduler. This allows you to, for instance, schedule, in this case, 5 jobs. So I'm scheduling a job at a priority of above normal here, and then idle, and then below normal, normal, and finally high. Now those 5 jobs have all been scheduled, and they were scheduled with the above normal first. The high priority was last. It was last. Now let's go look at that code. This is the job scenario. This is that exact scenario. I'm scheduling a job at above normal, and this is the code that's supposed to run, but before it even gets a chance to run, notice it's above normal, mm-hmm. Before it even gets a chance to run, I'm creating another job here. And then another job here, true. And then another job here. And the last one I create actually has the high priority. So let's go ahead and look at the order of the running of these jobs. The high priority job ran first, even though it was created last. That's the important part, okay? Now I can cancel these jobs anytime I want. So you can see that I can cancel a task. So I'm gonna schedule a job. Job 1 has been scheduled. Whoa, that doesn't work. Now I scheduled job 2. And they both have the default priority. And so they would run job 1 and then job 2. But I'm canceling job 1. So it just says running job 2 because job 1 got canceled. And you can cancel those anytime you want. You can also pause and resume them. So that's really handy. Schedule 1, 2, and 3, but pause 1. So 2 and 3 run. Mm-hmm. Now you could click resume. Now job 1 finishes.
Giddy up
is right. Yielding. You can execute a yield in your task. And let me show you exactly what that's going to look like. It might be a long running task, but it can yield to allow higher priority tasks to execute. And so in this case, look at the order of these. I'm running idle, yielding the job, yielding and putting the idle job back on the scheduler. And then I'm running another job, and that's going to continue to happen. Now I can add a higher priority task to the queue. And you should be able to see that high priority task runs here. So you've got things that are just kind of constantly going, but then you're going to drop a high priority in there, and you want to make sure that those other things have the capacity to yield to that higher task. And then you can complete that yielding task, and then it finishes as it was supposed to, okay? And then you can also drain down to a certain priority level. So you have all these jobs scheduled, and you can say, run all the jobs, draining them down to the idle, which is in the middle, the idle job level. And it will run just those jobs that are classified as idle or higher. So I can drain to high, which means I schedule a whole bunch of them, but I drain to high, which means that it runs just the high and it's done draining. And then it finally runs the normal, below normal, and idle. So if I drain to below normal, it's going to run all of them. That's the WinJS scheduler. And that concludes the tooling section, which concludes the second half of the presentation, which concludes the course.
Wow. Guess we're scheduled to end. So, wow, it's been actually an interesting 2 days for us, but today's been an exciting day doing the HTML5 refreshes. I think I would speak for you, but I want you to speak as well. We certainly appreciate the tremendous following and the all the amazing stories. In fact, I'm going to be so bold to say, if you want to know what I mean by stories, I'm going to put a little link on my screen, and it is going to be something that tells the story of what happened from the last one, the HTML5 one. So aka.ms/jump-start-story. If you would like to see, what I did is I collected a whole bunch of the Twitter responses that we got after the very first one we did, and you cannot believe how many people have life-changing moments be from that course, and we're hoping to, of course, continue to provide some great content and hopefully provide a value to the communities out there.
Yeah, and we just want to be as encouraging as we can be. You guys have embarked on a really, really fun journey. This is a really fun track to learn, and we just want you guys to not only have fun doing it, but to be successful at it. We know that you're learning this a lot of times to use directly in your job, like you might be watching a video, reading the documentation or whatever, and then using it at your job that day. We just think that's awesome. We're developers too, so we're right with you there. So
absolutely.
There is a poll on the website. We highly encourage you to go take that poll, that last poll.
It's right there.
Right there. And was there anything else we were supposed to remind them of on the way out?
Everybody rocks for watching.
Everyone rocks.
Yeah, you guys rock for watching.
Thank you so
much. Go ahead and throw us another tweet. We'll retweet it, give you guys a little bit of exposure.
Absolutely.
That would be fun. Definitely get your stories back to us. We love your stories of just, you know, learning, using the code at work, making apps. Definitely tell us if you make an app. We really want to see you get
Absolutely.
Apps in the store. Definitely tell us if you make apps and you're being successful at it, like you've made a good one and you're actually making some dough. That we love to hear that. Yeah. So you guys are great. Thank you very much for joining us for 6 hours today, 6 modules.
Yes.
And we hope you enjoy the, if you're watching in on demand, I hope it's helpful. If you didn't catch the gaming session that we did yesterday, that's going to be available in on demand as well. So you can go learn how to write games. I mentioned earlier in the chat session, but I've got another jumpstart that's going to be coming up at some point in the future on OData. OData is extremely exciting. I'm going to be joined by our colleague Bruno Turkoli to learn all about creating OData on the server side and the client side. So that should be awesome. Without further ado, let's say sayonara. Thank you.
Thank you.